Our first speaker, Dawn L. Oh, Eric. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. I'd like to ask our first speaker, Eric G., to come on. Okay.
I'm Eric and I'm an addict. And before I got here, people was cheering when my ass walked away. You know what I mean? I'm glad he gone. Right? The deal is that I got to Narcotics Anonymous February 6, 1992. I was real young, and I was under the lash. First thing I want to say is that there's so much love in here that I still, after all the years and all the work I've done, have a hard time embracing it. You see, man, where I come from, even the household I grew up in, you know, love was granted with abuse. So I don't know nothing about genuine love. So the deal is that the convention committee asked me to come out and share. I got here Friday and somebody grabbed me. And I'm always ready. My sponsor taught me that you prepare for war in a time of peace. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm begging God to get me out of something that if I had done the work and labored for a while, I would have never got in it. And if I get in it, because I'm human, I've been practicing so I know how to pick up the phone. I'm not distant, right? So I can get out of it without cutting my legs off. This topic is talking about self-acceptance. Getting all right with you. So, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I wasn't all right with me. You see, I wore a lot of masks, and our literature talk about that. The creator, he wrote the book because he knew the condition that we would be in. And what happened is that, you know, Fourth Step talks about surviving our emotions. I had an inability to do that, so I'm going to smoke something, drink something, sex with somebody, I'm going to do something so I don't feel what I feel. Because I don't know how to survive my emotions. I'm talking about having an attitude of integrity when somebody trying to cut your head off. Now, where I come from, I'm going to straighten that shit out. I got a way, too. Ah, man, you got to lose that. Yeah. And what happened is that I had a lot of dreams. I had a lot of aspirations. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't speak like this. You know, I was not able to articulate well. I was not confident. And I lived a lie. Today, I'm a confident man as a direct result of staying in the process. Right? What happened is that I picked up at 12. And by the time I was 17, I was on the corner hustling. And for a couple of years, it was good. I got me a big fancy car, and I had a lot of money and things. And I ain't do nothing but just snort a little raw and drink a little wine coolers every day. I didn't have no issues, you know what I mean? Y'all was bringing me checks and shit. You know, y'all had real problems, you know what I mean? In 90 days, I blew my nose out. I have addictive personality. I suffer from the disease of addiction. If you don't know what addiction is and you're new in here and you're like I was, look it up in the dictionary. Suffer from obsession and compulsive disorder. That's why sometimes you can't stop sexing. That's why sometimes you can't stop shopping without God's intervention. Yeah. Disease of addiction. Compulsive obsessive disorder. That's what it is. And how do you get a person that enough ain't never enough for a person that enough ain't enough for to stop wanting what it is that his ego desires because he too empty to stand and tell you what his heart desires? That's why we do what we do. Yeah. My sponsor said, you got to find out who you are and why you do what you do. Yeah, you need to know why you're so lustful. So what you lustful? You can get up out of that. You can learn to sleep alone, but you need to expose it. Then we got to dig a little deeper. And this self-acceptance piece, you see, I wore a lot of masks, so I didn't even know who the hell I was. I woke up sometimes and looked at a hat, and I said, you the hat I'm wearing today. Yeah. Looked like a good hat for me. What you say my name was? If you call me Tony in the hallway, I'm going to turn around and look at you. Because I got about three other aliases. I tell you something. Narcotics Anonymous has been the greatest gift ever been given to me. When I got here, I wore skull caps on my head. I was a real angry guy. I carried pistols and I used them. I don't say that to brag, to glorify, or anything. I'm just trying to show you a picture of what God can do. And I lived that way because I was very, very angry. So if you're yelling at your kids and you're cussing at them, if you're beating them, if you're bringing men or women in there, sleeping around your kids with them, might be a good idea to tell somebody so you can stop. Because that's what happened to me. I got beat a lot. People made me do things that you don't make children do. Grown folk don't have sex with children. Self-acceptance. Erg, you got to get all right with the fact that some people did some things to you. You got to forgive them and be willing to stay in the process so that you can get all right with you. It's not an excuse for you to continue to sabotage your life and others. No, that ain't an excuse. So what you got beat? I know that. But embrace it. Embrace it. So this piece on self-acceptance, what I had to do was take a journey through the steps. I had to recover. I had to recover from what happened to me. Right? And I tell you, I had a bright idea when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I really thought I was a pretty good guy until I started researching my story. At 6 years old, I used to sneak out to class when the reel was rolling and the movie was playing. And I always knew where teachers, particularly the librarian, because she kept putting money in there and I kept stealing it. 6 years old, I would go to another side of the school, steal out of her purse, go all the way back in class and act like wasn't nothing going on. My two first addictions were sex and money. Money made me feel different. I was poor, I was hungry, and I needed to feel like I was somebody. So I took the time to go inside because I didn't understand why all y'all was talking, and I felt, took the liberty to think that y'all were talking about me. Erg, you ain't that damn important. You really ain't. But the deal is that until I get all right with me, I cannot be all right with you. I mean, man, until I can sit with myself, until I'm all right, comfortable. There's a difference between isolation and being content with just you and God. And until I can get content with just me and God, I ain't got a chance in hell to have something decent. I'm talking about a relationship with you. Whether it's with a sponsee, whether it's with a woman, right? Whether it's with my children. Because I don't have the ability to be honest if I'm not comfortable with me. And so I had to take a journey through the steps. And what I did was, in 1992, I struggled. 1996, September 5th was the last day. I sold a pair of new Timberlands off my feet for a $10 hit of crack. Yeah. And I was the guy in the neighborhood everybody wanted to be like. Yeah, see, what y'all was going to be the reporters. I was going to be up here receiving my Heisman Trophy. And I was going to be like this. And y'all was going to be snapping. I had dreams, man. That's all I'm telling you. And when I have an opportunity to take a guy through the steps, and we get to the fourth step, one of the things that I direct him to do is to write about the lost dreams, your ambitions. Because if you can tie into what kept you from getting there, you'll see what's keeping you from getting there today. And I seen what kept me from getting there. And what happened is that it's like a love story when I got here. Man, people loved me. And I was young, angry, and crazy as hell. My first sponsor, Ben, I don't know if he's down here or not, but I decided to tell him, and I slid down in the seat of his car when we was riding past a spot where I had just robbed some guys a couple days prior. And he cussed me out, asked me why would I put his life in danger. I don't know no better, man. I'm just trying to get the next one. I ain't no gangster or none of that. But when I use, man, other people around me lose tremendously. And if I don't do the work to feel better about me, oh, man, I'm going to be hurting folk everywhere I go. And that ain't why I came here. I came here to feel better. And so what happened is that I took this journey inside. And every time I had an opportunity, every time I had an opportunity to face my fears, when a management job came up, I called a guy who's no longer with us and I told him. And I said, man, you know, I don't write well, I don't spell well. Furthermore, the truth is I got a fourth grade education and graduated high school. You know why? I'm a lot smarter than I thought I was, but the deal is that I was a traumatized child. So what happened is I stopped learning. I stayed here long enough to find out that I was smart, and I often tell myself I'm brilliant. Because if I don't tell myself and I'm waiting on you, I might not never get there. Yeah. I'm talking about getting all right with you, right? And the blessing is that I met this old man. I was in such bad shape. Walson took me and dropped me off, not to his sponsor house, but his grand sponsor. And this old man, right, for some of y'all got some issues with racism and shit, right? If I'm falling off a cliff, I don't give a damn what color the damn hand is. Get my ass up. Diversity is our key. Yeah. He was an old white guy. He liked men. I love women. Just something about him. He went to Berkeley University, highly educated, had over 5,000 books in his little apartment, and he carried me through the steps. And he told me things like, you're a man of great character. And I would look at him and say, this son of a bitch lying to me. I said, man, this shit is, I mean, why he gonna tell me some shit like this to give me a lie? Feed me some BS. People been doing this to me all my life. But you know what? If you learn to let people love you, they'll help you find out who you really are. And so I found out that I had a real big heart. And I often falsified my application. The deal is that I falsified it because I didn't want you to know who I really was. I'm really a loving and caring guy who's been tremendously hurt. And I got walls up so you can't hurt me. And in order to receive love, to give love, I got to get the walls down, develop some faith and trust so that I can move on and experience what God has for me. So this journey of self-acceptance, I had to start challenging my fears in that sixth step, right? I had to stop responding to my ego. How do you do that? You do that with your sponsor on speed dial. Yeah. And you wear their ass out. It's coming up again, sponsor. I don't want to do it. That's how I was taught. The old man said, I'm going to tell you what he told me when I was stealing off my job. I had 18 months. And this is exactly what he said, and excuse my French. He said, you're a selfish son of a bitch. He said, you have 5 kids to raise, but you were going a job that God blessed you with an opportunity to provide for them and you would take. He said, you're going to call me every day that you get the urge to steal. You're going to practice something that you're not even on, and that's the 7th step. You're going to humbly ask God to take the desire of greed away from you. After 2 weeks, because I followed the recipe, the struggle was over. It's amazing when you cooperate. I often have a problem with cooperating. The blessing is that I got to this program and I got involved. And I listened to the old man, and for 5 years straight, every Monday morning at 9 a.m., I caught the B2 bus from Southeast D.C. to Northeast. And I sat there and I listened to him. He gave me assignment after assignment. And sometimes I would well up. I said, man, why you keep giving me all this work? He said, because I ain't going to be here long. And he said, do you know how often it is I get somebody that's the open to me just giving it to him? He said, if you couldn't handle it, I wouldn't give it to you. So I accept the work, man. I embraced the journey. And I looked up, and the things that used to baffle me, they weren't baffling me anymore. The things that I was struggling with, I started having thoughts like, boy, it sure would be nice to have one woman. I don't know nothing about that shit. When you're empty and you're just a shell of a man, you reach for anything to validate you. I need help being all right with me. No, you don't, Eric. You need to trust God long enough through every opportunity he gives you to see how awesome he is. Then when you fall in love with him, your dependency changes. You stop depending on your survival skills, and you start embracing something called humility. And the ability to embrace humility and have an attitude of humility is saying that I surrender to God's way. That's what that's all about, Eric. That's why you keep struggling. I had to keep taking drugs. I'm going to read something just for today. It's from November 20th, page 338, right? Finding fulfillment. Just one little portion here. The recovery process experienced through our 12 steps will take us from an attitude of envy and low self-esteem to a place of spiritual fulfillment and deep appreciation for what we do have. We find that we would never willingly trade places with another, for what we have discovered within ourselves is what? Priceless. I don't want what you have. I don't want what God has gave you, because I don't want to miss out on the growth opportunity. Yeah. I don't want the big house and I ain't worked for it. I don't want it. Because there's joy in the journey. Every time I stay in the process long enough to get to the next side, right? What happens is my self-worth increases. So, my relationships, they get better. The type of relationships I have today are those of such quality. I have quality people in my life, people with integrity. I follow men who know how to stay home with their wives because that's my destiny. Oh, I'm done. It's some areas I'm done in. I ain't perfect, but I can tell you it's some areas I'm done in. And if you don't get to that point where it's some areas that you're done in, keep coming. But I'm done. I'm done because I don't want to continue to be humiliated when I know better. Spiritual maturity means that I've grown up and become a man. And I've learned to take the responsibility of a man. A man doesn't take advantage, he gives. I spent so many years bringing myself down by hurting others, only to find out that if I learn to trust others, I don't have to worry about getting hurt because God's going to take care of me. He's going to take care of me. I never took a risk. I don't know about you. I ain't taking no risk. If I can't see it, if I can't smell it, I'm going to stand right here. If I can't see it, if I can't smell it, now you can forget that one. Not me. Look, today, I've learned how to accept who I am. I've learned how to come to grips with the guy who's in therapy after being here 12 and a half years without a drink and a drug. The beauty of it is this. I keep working on me, and I'm embracing all the opportunities that I get, like standing up here and sharing with you all that whether you came from Yale or jail, that this is a place for the person that one is too many and thousands never enough. So if you're new in here and if you're wondering when you're going to get an opportunity to stand up here, all you have to do is keep coming back one day at a time. I never want to use again. Never. But all I have is today. So in order for me, in closing, to accept who I am, first, I got to do the introspection and go inside. Find out who I am. I got to go through the forgiveness process. It ain't all your fault. I got to let the people off the hook. I got to do the work to have a 12-step experience. I got to go through the 12 steps. I got to learn to deny myself and tend through the day so that I can have the power to do thy will in 12. And that show the transition that has taken place in my life and all of my affairs. Who are you when nobody's looking? You can watch me today. I don't have no secrets. And when I fall short, oh, anybody that know me from D.C., I'm coming on the mic and telling it. Because I'm not going to be on the front page of the damn Washington Times. And y'all don't know already. Thank you.
Let's thank Eric G. for sharing again. And at this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker. And I give you Dawn L.
Good job. Hi, I'm Dawn, and I'm an addict. And I get really nervous when I have to share. And I've seen a lot of people who I respected up here, and they get really nervous when they have to share too. So I feel like that's cool. When I was asked what topic I would like to share on at the convention, not because I'm a spectacular speaker or anything, I know people on the program committee. And of course, at this point, I get a choice because I know people on the program committee. And they offered me the topic, looking for love in all the wrong places. And like Eric, I don't do that anymore. So I told them, I don't do that anymore, you got a better topic. And they said self-acceptance, and I went, oh, okay, I can do that. But it's interesting that on this particular topic, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I got to Narcotics Anonymous on September the 20th of 1990. I have not used since. I love Narcotics Anonymous. The way I look, the way I talk, my friends, what I drive, the education that I have, the person that I am, the higher power that I even give the dignity of speaking of is all owed to Narcotics Anonymous. I've been fortunate enough to get an education in here. I've been fortunate enough to go learn a lot of stuff about life which I would have never been able to show up for had it not been for Narcotics Anonymous. And I took a lot of the tools that I learned here and believe that that's the point into the real world. I had a sponsor early on that said, if you don't want to use, you better make your life worth living or you're going to use again. So, there's the story. I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was 25 years old. I picked up at 12 years old. it's a defining age for a lot of people. Anyway, 12 and 14, I don't know what's about this. But anyway, I picked up at 12 and I got to Narcotics Anonymous via hitting bottom on my 25th birthday. I came to Narcotics Anonymous with a lot of baggage, a tremendous amount of violence that occurred in the home that I lived in. I, like him, experienced sex abuse. I dealt with, between my parents, 6 marriages, all of whom had ancillary children that I couldn't, you know. I don't know if y'all been to therapy. It takes like, you know, they sit down, they want to do this family tree thing. It takes me 3 sessions, okay, to get through who showed up when and where and what part of the world. So I got here, and the fact that I could not stand being inside my own skin was not a surprise. I ran using, not because I wanted to use. I used because there wasn't an alternative for me. I was in so much pain inside that I had to use. I found an answer at 12 years old to get rid of the fucking pain. Sorry, my husband told me I shouldn't use that word if I represent Narcotics Anonymous. He doesn't know what I was like when I got here. But anyway, fortunately, he didn't see me. So I lost track of that. So anyway, I came to NA. I arrived in treatment in Bethesda. Fortunately, they drug us out to meetings. They loaded us up in the van with the armband. I slid mine off and went to the meeting because I didn't want anybody to know I was in treatment. Of course, everybody saw us get out of the van, right? And and you know, we all know what newcomers look like, right? We see them. They come in together. They sit in the back row. They talk. They wiggle, squirm, and half of them haven't figured out to take off their armband yet. So anyway, I took off my armband and I sat down in the meeting and I proceeded to pick apart everything that was said, what everybody looked like. I judged people based on what their shoes looked like. And shoes were really important to me, especially if they were dirty. Anyway, I wouldn't listen to anybody if they had dirty shoes. So this is what I'm trying to set up here for you is the quality of what the way I thought, right? Like, y'all weren't worth talking to if your shoes were dirty. So I had a difficult time. I'm telling y'all, I had a difficult time. Eric spoke about having walls up around you. I was living behind bars reinforced with steel, concrete stuff, okay? You could not get near me without me threatening violence. I mean, that's the truth. My first sponsor used to tell me all the time, don't use, go to a meeting, don't hit anybody. And I took all that attitude into a recovery house with 9 women. Don't use, go to a meeting, please don't hit anybody. And my life, for the first year, I knew before I got clean, I can't stand it inside my own skin. I'm using drugs, and I ain't going north to get the pain to stay down. Keep it down, keep it down. Don't let anybody know you don't have it together that you're going to explode. Meanwhile, I'm thinking I'm losing my mind. I'm going to tick at any point. They're going to lock me up. I told my mother. My mother called me one time and said, how are you doing? Because she knew my story. And I said, I'm not doing well, Mom. I know at some point I ain't going to be okay. This was when I was using. So I got to NA. I took away the drugs, and all the stuff that I was feeling shot straight up to the surface. And there was nothing to put it down except for 14 meetings a week, a sponsor, a relapse group, aftercare, all this stuff, and I was still a loose cannon. I still had to be told, sit down. Nobody would tell me, sit down. They didn't tell me, sit down, shut up. They, trust me, they did not say that to me. I was the person that would have been like, it's on, right? So they didn't say that to me. But what happened was there were a couple of people who had seen me, who had looked past the wall, and they had seen that behind that exterior was a hurt, desperately quiet child. And there were enough of them in my life, two, one named Lisa and one named Dano, who had seen this person and had said, sit down, it's okay. And I stayed. And I would go back and I would gather my little stuff up and I would tell them what happened to me and I would leave. And I would go to the meeting and I would come back a week later and I'd tell them what happened to me and I'd leave. And this went on for like a year. And what they did was they set the stage for me to be able to tell y'all the truth about who I am. I, like Eric, believe that the only solution to my problem, because I had the problem when I was using them, right? I took away the drugs, which were my solution up until it stopped working, and I needed another solution. The only solution to that hurt, desperate little girl is the steps. The only way that that little girl can stand up and go, I'm an adult now, is for her to have an opportunity to take off the lies, the hurt, the pain. All the stuff has to come off, all of it. And all the way along the way, somebody's got to be there. I'm like him. Higher power, that's great and everything. We'll hang out later, dude. But right now, I got a problem. I need somebody to show up to talk to about it. I need people in my life right in front of me going, it's okay. It ain't going to fall apart. You'll be all right. So I want to do a little bit. I hate to run over. I hate it when people run over. Okay, I got plenty of time. I'm going to take a little bit of a journey here through the only way. And it says in our pamphlet, I brought it with me. I've lost it. Nope, here it is. Self-acceptance pamphlet. See, this one, the pink one, it's for softies. It says in there, the only way we're going to get some self-acceptance is to work the steps. I believe Narcotics Anonymous. I believe everything that's been told to me in Narcotics Anonymous. Even when I thought I didn't like what you were saying, I believed it. I believed that when I came to this convention for the first time, and I looked around, I was like, all these people are really hanging out doing this thing. I believed it. I could see the people. I believed that this shit worked, and I believed that it would work for me. If, and only if, I was willing to show up and take off a little bit of the walls, start letting people talk to me. So I'm going to walk a little bit through the steps and try to stay focused on how they apply to me getting real about who I am. However, I go off on tangents a lot, so I may not stay there. Anyway, the first step, the first layer of the sex, this first step, because it comes in layers. I'll try to stick with the first layer. The first layer is that I have to admit to myself when I get to NA that I can't use anymore. I have a lot of things that I choose to use. When I first got to NA, it's about the drugs, y'all. I cannot get high ever again. And there's the part that everybody wants to step away from, right? I want to step away. Let's don't talk about ever again. Let's pretend like it's just for today. You will just for today your ass right out of here, okay? The truth of the matter is, the pain that I had to go through in the first step in getting real with who I am hit me at about 6 months clean when I was standing in the recovery house and someone had dumped Sweet and Low on the counter and I got a craving that about threw me against the wall. And I said, oh shit, I'm gonna get high. And I called my sponsor. And by this time, I had put a little bit of money in the bank, right? I mean, it's been 6 months. I got some money in the bank, not a lot, but enough to cop. And I tell her, that's it. I don't know what to do. It's a horn. I want to get high. Because this first craving I had, my higher power did for me what I could not do for myself and hadn't given me one prior. And she said, go spend that money now on anything but drugs. And I was like, okay, I'm going. So I probably took a friend of mine shopping, and she probably told me, don't hit the sales lady while we were there. I spent the money I didn't use. But in that process, for about a week thereafter, I cried and cried and cried because I realized I lost the only hope I ever had of getting out of my own skin, and it was ever. I wasn't ever going to be able to use again. I was sad. Oh, God, what does that mean? I really got to do this shit. Okay, all right. Well, what that meant was, we lead up to the second step. That is the first real self-acceptance, real truth that I had to face. The drugs were not going to be the answer, and they were never going to work for me again. So that gave me an opportunity. And the opportunity it gave me that has kept me clean one day at a time ever since, it gave me the opportunity to have to find another solution. Another solution that was going to last more than one day. Another solution that was going to take me on a journey to reality. At the time, I didn't know what this meant, or I would have ran, right? I would have been like, I'm out of here. However, I approached the second step. I believed, again, what I saw. And what I saw was people coming to Narcotics Anonymous, getting their lives back together, living somewhat happy, which I didn't have any of that. I was not happy. I was not a happy camper. I was insistent. I was on a momentary basis, ecstatic. I was up and down like a roller coaster. I was a lot of stuff, but I was not happy. And I wanted to be happy because for an addict, I don't know about y'all, I like to feel good. I do not like feeling bad. So I wanted to be happy, and I saw people who were happy, and I saw what they did. And back then, they always had steps hanging on the wall everywhere, and it was obvious. You had to look, okay, that's what you got to do. And they also had character defects hanging on the wall a lot, too. It would tell you what not to do. And I started to put together a real, reality-based program. And the program was go to meetings, call your sponsor. Don't use. Pray. I don't like pray. I don't like that one at all. I don't want nothing to do with pray. That's a lie. Only fools do this. You, come on, y'all. That's embarrassing. And help somebody else. And that has been the foundation for my higher power since. And the reason I say this is because when I get really jacked up, right, and I need a higher power, I go, oh, my God, how's the program go? And I always say recovery's in the palm of my hand. Don't use, go to a meeting, call your sponsor, pray, and help somebody. So it's like, all right, it's right in the palm of your hand. You just do these things, you'll be okay. And I believe that, and I still believe that. It worked then, it's worked every time since that I have decided to work a program. And then I approached the third step. It took me, okay, so I worked a lot of steps in the middle, okay? It took me 5 years in here. 5 years, literally, to accept the third step. I did not want to let go of the control. I wanted to be able to work out my finances, to run my relationship, to do my daughters. I can figure out how to fix them. And if this man doesn't act right, I just... You know, I got a lot of ways about fixing stuff, right? At 5 years clean, all my fixing fell through the bottom. And I stood one more time with the truth. The truth was, I really didn't know how to take care of my own life. I had turned over my addiction. I had turned over a lot of things. I had not turned over my will. I want my way. Excuse me, pardon me, I'm getting my way. Hey, you, this is my way. I had 100 ways of getting my way done. And at 5 years clean, I hit a bottom with it, and I let go. Almost used, just just in case y'all want to know. You keep driving that hammer through the wall, and you will come this close to getting high. I was in the club with drug dealers with cocaine right beside me, thinking I could manage that shit. Almost used. Fortunately, Narcotics Anonymous works, and a lot of other people hit bottom with that stuff at the same time. And I watched them, and I saw them, and they were... Yeah, they were down at, what did Alvin say last night? Uptown, hitting bottom on the same crap, right? And I was like, okay, I know how to do this, just follow them. They stopped. So, I mean, it's a process in here sometimes. But the truth that I found out at that time was that I'm not any good with this. I'm not any good at running my own life. I am not any good at running my own life. You talk about a harsh reality. Harsh reality. I mean, bad reality. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm going to turn it over to what? Yeah, I can't call y'all anymore. Yeah, that's great. I've been calling y'all for 5 years and it ain't working. I had to turn it over to a loving God, a real loving God, a real higher power, omnipotent and running stuff throughout the universe. And I've kept that higher power ever since, and I'm going to tell you this is kind of funny. My husband, he calls it the marionette God. And I was thinking about this last night, and it's the marionette God that can come down and make everybody work in the direction that makes my life go well. He's like a puppeteer, right? And it's really a childlike process to believe that there's some guy up there running stuff, right? I'm desperate. I'll take it. I mean, really, I'll take it. I know that I'm really self-centered, I'm really sensitive, I'm really a lot of things, and I really do need to believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is a higher power that's looking down and going, Dawn, I love you. Go, baby, you go, go, go. Right for me. Not for everybody else. Y'all get your own higher power. You can check mine out. This one's mine. And I need it because I almost use not paying attention to it, okay? And I'm still scared to use it. I mean, I'm really scared of using. So I get this higher power. So I jump from 1 year to 5 years real quick there. Did y'all notice that? In the middle of this, I actually did some other step work. Because when I was in the third step, and I hadn't gotten to a full understanding of what that surrender actually meant, at the end of the steps, it says work the rest of the steps and you'll get it. If you just go from, if you get a third step and you have this little mustard seed of faith, just a little bit, and you work the rest of the steps, you'll get it. So, I worked a fourth step. What I did during that fourth step when I had like 7 months, I wrote down things in that fourth step that were horrifying. I mean, horrifying. I'm not telling you, you know, you hear a lot of people up here talking about what it looks like in NA, and, you know, when I used, I did this and I did that, blah, 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 blah. I didn't do anything glamorous. The only thing I did was piss myself, okay? The truth of the matter is, the things that happened to me were horrifying. And I had to go through that. And I had to be willing to sit there and address the truth. Address the fact that I had been damaged. Badly. Really badly. Nobody told me anything good. When I got to NA, people literally had to tell me to say thank you, and I resisted it. Please, I still resist because I'm not begging for shit. I ain't begging y'all for nothing. I'm not saying please. So I'm getting there with please. I didn't have any manners. Through those six marriages, my parents never taught me how to brush my teeth. And I'm not lying. I never went to the dentist when I was a kid, ever. They didn't take care of us. I mean, things happened to me that were horrifying. And things were done to me maliciously that were horrifying. And I had to be willing, through the help of those two people that I talked about, to say, this is what happened to me. And they said, it's going to be okay. It'll be all right. I was like, it ain't all right. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And I walked through a fourth step that brought nightmares. I mean, it was tough. It was tough. I'm not going to glaze over the fact that it was tough. But it was worth every sentence. And I didn't have a guide back then. You know, you just start writing, right? We didn't have no guides. We didn't have all that shit. You just start writing, right? So I take this document, document of the mess, to a sponsor. And I show the sponsor what happened to me. And she said to me, she didn't say to me, that happened to me. She didn't say to me, I did that too. She didn't share any stuff that she had done that was as fucked up as the stuff I'd done. What she said was, that is terrible. And I finally heard, somebody heard what I said. It was terrible. It was painful. And I needed somebody to hear what I had never been able to say. And through her doing that, she set me free. And what she did was, because now I'm telling you, that was all the negative, right? At that point, I became an opportunity to grow. Because I was able to get that mess, all that trash, all that damage out. And wipe the slate clean. And I didn't feel like that big relief that anybody talked about. None of that. What I felt was raw. Disidentified. I had no idea who I was. Had no clue. I was working in GW then. I walked down Pennsylvania Avenue, and there was a piece of building that I could see myself every morning walking with the reflection of me going to work. And I would look over and go, who is that? At this point, I got about 18 months clean, and I walk up on the sixth step, and I find out exactly who I am. And I find out that some of the stuff that was in the document was gone. There was part of the stuff that was still there. There was part of the stuff that wasn't actually part of the document. It was gone. And me and my friend allow one another the opportunity to sit down and point out each other's character defects at one point. We were allowed to pick three. And I told her hers, and she told me mine, and it was ugly, and it was true, and we both ran away and hid, probably for a couple months. But anyway, I had an opportunity during that period to understand and learn some other stuff about myself. And what I learned was, is that I have, I had then, and I still do have character defects, but I had a chance to get an answer to them. I learned really quickly that God wouldn't do for me what I could do for myself. I mean, literally would not do for me what I could do for myself. And there was a part of this character changing that I needed to show up for. And I wanted to be like, don't worry, God will remove that in good time. And at this point, it's a good asset. Maybe it's working for somebody else, right? That's why it hasn't been removed yet. I'm justifying the hell out of all this stuff, right? I'm like, okay, the reason it hadn't gotten removed is because God's using these character defects to help other people. Well, character defects don't help other people. They hurt them. At the time, I didn't know this. I just wanted to get my way still, and I hadn't gotten to that bottom yet. And I'll talk about that bottom in a second in relation to the seventh step. But eventually, I got so much pain, again, in recovery from my character defects that I surrendered at a different level. And I hit my knees. Actually, I hit the floor. I don't know if y'all know Peggy D. She told me, I called her up and I said, Peggy, this has been like the third or fourth time that I called her about the same thing. And she said, you need to get your knees on the floor. And then she goes, no. Someone like you, Dawn, you need to get your forehead on the floor and ask God to remove this before you use. And I said, oh my God, she's serious. So I, you know, laid down on the floor. And I mean, literally got on the floor, got my forehead on the floor because I was scared. I knew there was a problem going on here. This is bad. And I asked it to be removed. And something happened. And what happened was I started hitting that bottom that I talked about. And I had a little bit of a process to go through. It took me some time. I would love to tell y'all what happened overnight, but it didn't. It was 2 years worth of one thing after another. I mean, I took a whipping. I would go to my friends and tell them, this happened. And they'd be like, oh my God. And then I would tell them, this happened. And they'd be like, oh my God. Finally got to the point, I was like, y'all, my life is awful. And they were like, you're right. It is. It's horrible. And I would be like, now you remember, I told you, I already decided I wasn't using. I'm not doing it. I'm not going out like that. I knew that I would have to get another weight key tag. Everybody does. So you can go out and use. You'll be back if you make it. You might not make it through the morgue. But anyway, the morgue. Sorry. I have to close up soon. So I'm going to zip along here. Obviously, I don't have time to keep on talking about get through the steps. What I want to talk about real quick, I got through the seventh step. Eventually, I hit that bottom, and I said, I give up, God. Do whatever you want with my life. I don't care what it is. I don't care how I got to go. I don't care if I got to be broke. I don't care if I got to be by myself. I don't care if these kids go back to their father. I don't care. I do not care. Please take this away from me. I don't want to do it anymore. And I got to the eighth and ninth step. And what happened was, I realized that I had character. And there's a real problem when you find out you got character. It's right back to self-acceptance, right? There's a real problem when you find out you got character. You actually have to show up to present well. And you find out that there's something you can do, and you have to do it. So as a result of that, I wish I could tell you all the full, look, we need a whole other thing to finish telling you this story. But the truth of the matter is, and she's telling me I got to get cut off. The truth of the matter is, since that time, I started walking through the eighth and ninth step, and I started finding out that I have good character. I am somebody. And I have lived an amazing life ever since. Amazing. I couldn't even tell you the whole beyond your wildest dreams aspect. I mean, I have gone to school. I have been the most traveling broke person I have ever seen. I lived 10 years broke and went around all over the place. Like, broke. Why? Because my higher power was bringing it to me. You take one step, your higher power will take another one. You keep rolling down the highway, and you'll find out that the person you discover is the best person you have ever met. People ask me, you know, what would you want? If I could pick a friend to put in my life, I would pick me. I would absolutely pick me. The person that came here, that escaped every moment of their own existence, can now tell you, I don't know anybody else better that I'd like to hang out with. I like me. This whole love me, I don't know if I love me. I know one thing, I'm cool as shit. And this is the truth. I mean, I really am. And all by Narcotics Anonymous, y'all. All of it. But I'm loyal. I'm kind. I am generous. I actually care about other people. That's an amazing thing for a self-centered person. I mean, it's amazing that I can say, wow, they must be in pain. The other day I was at work, and this girl acted out on me, right? And I looked at her, and I went to the bathroom, and I applied a program, and I prayed. And someone told me that you can detach from people, but you can say, all right, I'm going to let them go. I'm all right. Hold on. I'm going to finish this. You can let them go, but you can also let them go and understand that they've been hurt. You can look at them and be like, God, it must be hard to live inside you. And I've lived inside that skin. I've lived in pain. And I know that I was not a bad person. I was just hurt. And I looked at her and I thought, I got to deal with this girl every day. It's better to love them than to condemn them. So, if I can say that, chances are I have a little bit of, like, love for myself. I didn't have that when I got here. I'll close with that. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, family, again, I'm Sharon, a blessed recovering addict, and let's give our speakers another hand. And we have a nice way of closing.